You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
You're listening to Unceded Airwaves by the Indigenous Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. It's you. Airwaves is broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. All right, you heard the intro today from Classic Roots. You're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM. We are broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. My name is Lisa Gerbov, and today we have a very busy show for Unceded Airwaves, so we're going to start off with a round of intros. I'm Lisa. I'm from the Tsimshian Nation. My mother comes from Lough Gwilym's, but I grew up back in Prince Rupert, and I acknowledge that I'm an uninvited guest on the unceded territory of the Musqueam people while I am studying here on the UBC campus.
Hi, I'm Carly Baker. I'm of Icelandic and Cree Métis ancestry. My mom is settler from Iceland and my dad is Cree Métis. My family, my Cree family, is from Treaty 1 territory in Manitoba, but I was born and raised on the unceded traditional ancestral territories of the Stalo people.
Hi, I am Victor. I am from Ecuador. I am an Saraguro Indigenous, and I am studying First Nations and Indigenous Studies here at the UBC. I've been living here for 2 years, and I'll be here for 2 more years.
My name is Josh Kiyoki. I'm both of Cree and settler Canadian descent, and I'm recently back in Vancouver on unceded Coast Salish territory, studying at UBC.
And Josh is our board op for the day, so thank you so much for operating the boards for us, Josh. We want to thank you for tuning into Season 2, Episode 18. 2 more episodes and we're going to be at Episode 20. Can you guys believe that?
No.
This is nuts. I'm just like in awe every week. This week we are discussing the speaking engagement that John Furlong was invited to on the UBC campus. We have a segment that is contributed by Josh Kiyoki about the Talking Stick Festival. And we also have a clip from Mario Parent, who is interviewing DJ Kukum, promoting the local music scene here in Vancouver. So to start us off.
So we are the Indigenous Radio Collective. Every week we discuss Indigenous issues, current events, and entertainment. We're a collective of Indigenous and non-Indigenous students who use our weekly airtime for our own self-representation.
We strive to center Indigenous voices on our show and to build narratives that empower Indigenous people. Self-representation in media is something that Indigenous people don't often have access to.
This show gives us the opportunity to share and define who we are as Indigenous people. Indigenous cultures are incredibly diverse, and the nuances of our diversity are not always represented in the mainstream broadcast media.
It can be difficult to find Indigenous role models in popular media, so this show offers an opportunity to highlight some influential Indigenous people.
If you can relate to the goals of the show and are wondering how to get involved, please reach out to us. You can always reach us on our social media, Facebook or Twitter. If you have a voice for decolonization, then we want to hear from you.
Everyone is welcome, and there's no experience necessary. Our weekly meeting is at Wednesday, 4 p.m. at CITR in the lower level of the Nest. If you want to get involved but don't want to be on air, there are plenty of other ways to participate in the collective.
But this week's meeting is actually postponed until next week because we're all on reading break. So no meeting this week, but next week will be at 4 o'clock.
You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. If you are aware of a great Indigenous artist, send us a tweet using the hashtag Unceded Music, or send us a Facebook message at Unceded Airwaves, and we'll do our best to get in on the air. And if we play a song you send us, we'll give you a shout out.
We're always looking to hear from our listeners about what you're up to, so let us know about any Indigenous artists that you're into right now and what events you're attending or promoting. As always, we'll post a link to the podcast of this episode after the show. We'll have our weekly Unceded event listing to share a little later.
So we've got some shout-outs for those occupying their territories. Maddie Lee from the Gitsan Nation, the Unist'ot'en Camp, and the Wet'suwet'en people. Those occupying Lilu Island from the Gitwilgiots tribe in the Tsimshian territory. That's Lisa. Woo! The Lakota Sioux tribe in Standing Rock. The Chilkwat Nation, who are still in a 30-year legal battle with Seiko Mines. And speaking of long battles, this is a personal shout-out to the Natchonayak Dun, Trondakwetchen, Tetlikwetchen, and Buntetkwetchen people fighting to protect the Peel River watershed. The Supreme Court of Canada hearing is happening on March 22nd.
Excellent. Thank you, everyone. So we want to get the show rolling because we have a lot of topics to discuss today. But to start us off, we have a student panel where we will be discussing the topic, a very sensitive topic. And so this is a content warning, if you're triggered by topics of abuse with regards to First Nations people, if this is a sensitive issue for you, we welcome you to tune back into CITR at noon after the show. So to get into it, John Furlong has been invited to speak next week on February 28th, 2017 as the keynote speaker at the 18th annual ZLC Millennium Scholarship Breakfast. Furlong is a powerful and influential figure, and that's why he was invited to his fundraiser in order to drum up donations. However, there are outstanding allegations from former students at Immaculata Elementary School in Burns Lake that claim that Furlong abused them while he was while he was their teacher. So we felt that this was an important discussion to have about Furlong, who has been invited to speak at this fundraiser on the UBC campus. As students, the university doesn't always acknowledge the power dynamics at play in situations like these. And holding up the voice of John Furlong, who is seen as a leading sports expert while ignoring the testimonies and serious allegations of multiple First Nations people who say that they suffered in the care of Furlong, perpetuates these unequal power structures and silences the voices of Indigenous people and silences survivors of abuse as well, in an era while the university is trying to be seen as a leader in reconciliation. John Furlong has not been tried for these allegations and has not been found guilty by the colonial legal system, but at the same time, he has not been cleared of his name. And the only thing that has gone through the courts is a high-profile defamation suit against Laura Robinson, who was a reporter who investigated this these issues. So that does not address the validity of the testimonies of dozens of First Nations people. And so without further ado, here is the segment that we recorded last night at the CITR studio. My name is Lisa Gerbov, and you're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded lands of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Next up, we want to have a student panel to discuss the recent reinstatement of John Furlong, who is going to be speaking at a UBC fundraiser within the next week. This is problematic for a number of reasons, but before we get into the topic, I'm going to get the Indigenous Collective to introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Maya. I just moved to Vancouver in September from Philadelphia, which is home to the Lenape. And I am Irish on my mother's side of the family, and my father's side is Jewish Polish. And I'm currently doing my master's degree in anthropology at UBC on the unceded ancestral territory to the Hunkaminam speaking Musqueam people.
Hi, I'm Lucy. I'm a Kwakwaka'wakw from the Gwasanaquoddeck Nations on northern Vancouver Island. I'm in my third year of the First Nations and Indigenous Studies program, and I'm the president of the First Nations and Indigenous Studies Student Association.
Hey, I'm Melissa. I'm a settler from the traditional Mi'kmaq territories, now known as Prince Edward Island. I'm in my fourth year here at UBC on traditional Musqueam territories, and I'm studying history as well as First Nations and Indigenous Studies.
So John Furlong is a settler of Irish descent who originally immigrated from Ireland to northern British Columbia. The Furlong biography, Patriot Heart, states that he immigrated from Ireland in 1974 and says that he went to Prince George to direct a high school athletic program. However, he left out the part where he immigrated in 1969 to work at Immaculata Elementary School in Burns Lake. So that part of his history was left out of his biography. In 2012, Laura Robinson wrote a lengthy article whereby she spoke to First Nations students from Immaculata Elementary School who shared their experiences of alleged abuse by Furlong through signed affidavits. There were dozens of people who spoke to Robinson about their experiences. Some claim that they were physically or verbally abused. Some make the claim that they witnessed abuse. And another group claimed that they reported abuse. Eight people quoted in the article signed affidavits before the interview with Robinson, and which was to say that everything that they were speaking about was truthful. Excerpts from these interviews and links to the full affidavits are available online through the Canada Land website. Robinson was sued by John Furlong for defamation, which she countersued and lost. The original article that Laura Robertson wrote by the Georgia Strait is still online on their website if you want to check it out. But the fact of the matter is that there are still dozens of people who allege that John Furlong physically and verbally abused them when they were children at the Immaculata Catholic School. Fast forward to now, Furlong was an invited guest to be a keynote speaker at the 18th annual ZLC Millennium Scholarship Breakfast, which is coming up on February 28th. Once the announcement came out that Furlong was going to be speaking, Furlong was uninvited as the keynote speaker, possibly due to public outcry via Twitter, social media, and communication with the university. But the university did not explicitly say why Furlong was asked not to attend. Santa Ono soon after reinstated Furlong as the keynote speaker to attend this fundraiser. Now, this is problematic for a number of reasons. Our role here as the Indigenous Collective at CITR is to bring representation to Indigenous voices and issues in the media. So far, we've seen this lack of representation on campus where Indigenous voices have been silenced. And this issue perpetuates the silence and erasure of Indigenous experiences. For instance, Daniel Justice resigned from the Sexual Assault Committee at UBC over Furlong's reinstatement. So to start off the discussion, we're going to start off by talking about Furlong and kind of what his relationship to UBC has been.
I think that this point is really important to think about in terms of UBC and their relationships, because specifically with Furlong, he received an honorary law degree from the university in 2010 for his work as CEO of the Vancouver Organizing Committee for the 2010 Winter Olympics and their Paralympic Games. And in their statement, they noted that his role in receiving this honorary degree was an opportunity for him to reach out to First Nations, which is just very interesting considering his very contentious history. And, you know, when we introduce ourselves, we acknowledge the land that we are on, and UBC has a longstanding relationship with the Musqueam community here. So it's very interesting, this prioritization of relationships that we are seeing with this reinstatement of Furlong to be the honorarium speaker, and not recognizing that there are multiple relationships at play and giving voice to these different dynamics.
Yeah, exactly. I think with the reinstatement of the of Furlong's speech, as somebody who holds substantial place in, you know, the public realm, who can influence people, who can contribute to, for example, in terms of the UBC Athletics Banquet, donors, like funding for that program, and like Maya said, you see the prioritization there. You're upholding this one relationship over other ones, and what does that mean as UBC, you know, as an institution that's talking about reconciliation with Indigenous peoples?
And I think too, that's really important is Daniel Justice, who is the Canada Research Chair in Indigenous Literature and Expressive Culture, and he's also a professor at UBC, and he's the one who Lisa mentioned earlier resigned from the committee that he was on. And he made a really strong statement that was saying that there were many responsible and compassionate ways this matter might have been handled that would not have once again silenced or erased the abuse allegations of dozens of people. And the result of the UBC press release to reinstate Furlong, Daniel Justice was saying, does precisely just that. And it's really problematic that this situation has created an environment in which Daniel Justice needed to resign in order to uphold integrity of these relationships and commitments with himself for these issues of reconciliation, Indigenous representation, because now there is no Indigenous representation on this committee, which is a big problem because there is a significant gap considering, and this is what Justice said, considering that our community is statistically far more likely to experience sexual, gender-based, and radicalized violence than any others in Canada. And I think that this is also a great time to also bring up the ways that this issue has been covered in the media and what might be problematic about the coverage that we've been seeing in the media.
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of keyed into this issue a couple months ago, and I started following how the mainstream media was reporting on this issue, and going back since 2012 when the Georgia Strait initially published Robinson's article. And I've found it, you know, unfortunately not shocking, but interesting, like the trend in media and how it's missing a lot of the facts in this case, how it's, you know, generally leaning towards sort of sympathizing with Furlong and siding with him as, you know, someone whose name has now been dragged through the mud due to all of these allegations, and yet hasn't really taken a critical stance on the substance and validity of those allegations and what they would mean. And to me, it's just a huge gap in how we're thinking about this issue. It's concerning. Some of it has been outright racist. For example, Christy Blatchford, in a December 30th, 2016 article for the National Post, discusses the allegations and states, in reference to one of the individuals who came forward, that the complainant was just, quote, trying to get paid and was, quote, clearly riding the residential school train. So you're seeing this take-up of tropes in the media of Indigenous peoples and, you know, clearly racist, also missing the point in a lot of ways.
And can you talk briefly, I know that you mentioned this before when we were all talking, about what is at stake for these people that are stepping forward and giving these statements? It's not an easy, simple thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, coming forward with allegations of assault, of abuse, for anybody that has experienced that, it's can be re-traumatizing. It's an incredibly arduous thing to do. You know, you're put in the public eye. You're kind of constantly held to trial for experiences that you had at the hands of somebody else. Like, that's not an easy thing to talk about. But even from a legal standpoint, too, like signing a sworn affidavit, that's a legally binding agreement. You expose yourself to criminal penalties, up to 14 years in prison. You know, for making false claims in an affidavit. So for the individuals that signed affidavits in this case, that should be considered with considerable weight. To discount that entirely, to see the media not even considering those stories, you know, you really start to see the larger sort of industry at play here, you know, where on the one hand, you're valuing and upholding one set of stories, and then on the other hand, you're ignoring and obscuring another set of voices.
And I feel like it's not only the media, it's also being perpetuated in the justice system, because through the initial article that was written by Robinson, all these affidavits weren't actually acknowledged in the judicial system. None of these allegations have been addressed through the justice system, and even though it has been acknowledged that there needs to be cases opened about these allegations. Basically, what has happened is the court has turned their backs on the accusers in this way. They haven't valued the statements. They haven't done the work to actually look into this to figure out what is truth. And so it's not only leaving the accusers and also other people who have witnessed this type of abuse
in the dark about the outcome of this, it's also left the media kind of in a blackout as well, because nobody really knows. I mean, even for us talking about it, we don't really know how we can really frame it. With we're trying to be very careful about framing it is what we're trying to do. Yeah. And I think that's part of like how the media is taking it. Like, I mean, with libel cases and with Robinson having such a high profile court case in the media, it really scares other media outlets into not talking about this type of stuff because they could be next.
And when you think about the context of the Robinson v. Furlong defamation trial, you know, which Furlong ultimately won, you see Indigenous voices entirely cut out of the conversation. As Jesse Brown from Canada Land has reported in November 25th, 2016, quote, "The voices of the accusers who Robinson wrote about were excluded from the libel trial. They signed sworn affidavits about the abuse they say they suffered when they were students at Immaculata School under Furlong's care. These affidavits were called hearsay by the BC Supreme Court Justice Wedge and were not admitted into evidence." So, I mean, what is considered evidence here? I mean, you're talking about a legally binding document not being considered evidence by the courts, Indigenous experiences being discounted. It's just such a problem. And even larger problem is that this defamation trial and the conclusions and reasoning developed within that case have been treated as a trial responding to the allegations of individuals who came forward. This has been widely reported as such in the media, but that's not the case. The point remains that no trial has actually taken place in direct response to the dozens of Native individuals from the Burns Lake area. And so, I mean, we have a very flawed treatment of one portion of evidence, you know, on the one side, and then also a more glaring issue of no trial specifically for Indigenous complainants having happened. You know, I'm still waiting.
Yeah, because it hasn't actually gone through the system. There's no way that we can really know, because all we've seen is a defamation trial, which isn't addressing the actual allegations that are at hand. And the only thing that we've heard from Furlong is that he denies the allegations, but hasn't actually told anyone what happened at Immaculata.
Yeah, in terms of Furlong not responding to these things and just, you know, denying the accusations. You know, he also has yet, I mean, I could be wrong, but from my understanding of the media coverage, he has yet to respond to any of the points made about the very, very glaring 5 years missing from his biography. I mean, he hasn't responded to that. I mean, maybe he didn't think it made for a nice book.
But how does that really play into a broader discourse, especially what's happening right now around reconciliation? I mean, everyone's talking about truth and reconciliation, but where's the truth in this?
So on campus here at UBC, UBC has positioned itself as a university that is devoted to reconciliation. They have two major initiatives that are happening, and they're currently in the works. There is a totem pole that is being carved, and it will be raised, and it's called it's going to be called the Reconciliation Pole. And the other initiative is the Indian Residential School History and Dialogue Center, which is being built on campus, is supposed to be a space to be able to access the records of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. It's supposed to also be a dialogue center, which is really important. As we're talking now, dialogue is such an important part of not erasing the truth of our past. So it's pretty ironic that they're raising the pole, they're building this center, and then this major issue is silencing the voices. So it's like UBC wants to be seen as furthering the dialogue and furthering reconciliation, but then by acts like these, they're actually stepping back.
Which is very problematic, especially considering UBC is putting an image out there, and then through the series of events of inviting Furlong, uninviting Furlong, re-inviting Furlong, that just kind of goes to show kind of like this back and forth play by the university to appease both sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then on top of that, like, what does this mean for Indigenous students at UBC when UBC is saying that they have a commitment to reconciliation and a commitment to allowing us to speak, and then silencing through acts like this? And then on top of that, like, I mean, UBC does not have ongoing funding for Indigenous students collectives. Like, if you look at SFU or UVic, these major universities both have ongoing funding for students' initiatives, student groups. UBC does not. And and UBC is trying to be like forward and letting us have a voice and let us speak and let us have reconciliation.
But it kind of just goes to show, not in a meaningful way.
Not in a meaningful
way. You know, we want to put the brand out there, but at the same time, we don't want to give money to students.
Yeah, exactly. So through the poll raising and through the Center for Dialogue, is UBC working towards reconciliation? The furlong issue demonstrates, I don't know, and maybe UBC should put their money where their mouth is.
And maybe if UBC actually engaged in these critical dialogues where they are incorporating multiple voices and perspectives, they would have a little more context to really get at the true meaning of reconciliation and move away from this problematic branding of altruism. And with Ono's statement, he said that it's really important that furlong comes to UBC because he has been, this is a quote, that he has been and continues to be a champion for amateur sport in Canada and around the world. And in this regard, he is especially qualified to speak at this event for the benefit of our aspiring student athletes. You know, we can't continue to isolate these different contexts and contemporary issues because everything is intricately and critically connected. And by denying these connections, you're ultimately denying history and just continuing to perpetuate the really harmful impacts of colonization.
So what has the public reaction been around this issue of furlong attending this fundraiser?
Yeah, I mean, it's been interesting. I think here at UBC, from the departments like FNIS and sort of working from a critique of settler colonialism, it's been quite condemning of furlong. But when you look outside of that to the broader public, I'm talking more like the Canadian or maybe BC specifically, settler populations generally speaking. You know, it's been startling to me that, you know, the voices of dozens of individuals coming forward claiming of having personally experienced abuse, or as witnesses, you know, 8 signed affidavits and biography omission, you know, that these things haven't raised red flags for Canadian and BC citizens. You know, to me, I think this speaks to a much larger issue. Like, you can't really, you know, as Amaya just said, the interconnection of these kinds of things to larger social realities. And if you look at the state of decolonization or, you know, quote unquote reconciliation in Canada, this sits very conveniently within that framework. You know, as from a settler standpoint, there's so much work to be done. You know, self-reflexivity, a genuine critical effort to right ongoing wrongs, it remains incredibly minimal in Canada. You know, the reaction to furlong, the furlong issue, albeit largely influenced by a problematic media coverage, is just one other example of settler Canadians working to maintain business as usual, to continue turning away from their complicity in settler colonial systems of oppression and ongoing inequality. So, I mean, I think to purport that we're working towards reconciliation while at the same time totally ignoring our positions within this system, ignoring how we relate to individuals like furlong, how we relate to these kinds of problems, where we position ourselves within that context is so critical, and it speaks directly to what's going on with furlong. And I don't see how we can start to unpack what this means without unpacking settler colonialism. And I think that is really the point to take away from how the public has reacted.
It's just completely saturated in ironies and hypocrisy. Mm-hmm. And I think, too, is, you know, the first thing that President Ono could have done was communicate with Indigenous students, mm-hmm. reach out to the student collectives that are on campus, you know, host a discussion, a roundtable, anything to just make it even seem like he's trying to engage in dialogue. First step in these kinds of circumstances. So I'm just very, very disappointed by the university's kind of callous indifference that they have really had as a tone to this whole thing, and just completely reducing and simplifying it to, this is just somebody who's done great work with athletics in the Olympics. It's not that simple. It never will be that simple. And it's incredibly problematic to deny the complexities of this situation.
Yeah. And then on a final note, in terms of bringing light to voices that have been silenced and taking them seriously, I'm just going to leave you with a list of the Indigenous individuals from Burns Lake who have come forward and signed affidavits. Beverly Abraham, Catherine Dora Woodgate, Ronnie Patrick Alec, Richard Perry, Pius Samuel Charlie, Ronnie West, Ruby Helen Adams, Morris Patrick Joseph. Their full stories and their affidavits can be found in a CanadaLand article, I Remember John Furlong, dated November 25th, 2015.
This is a very important issue, and this conversation isn't going to stop here. This event is coming up next week on February 28th, 2017, where John Furlong will be the keynote speaker at the 18th annual ZLC Millennium Scholarship Breakfast. I just want to thank everyone for coming on the show today. You heard from Maya Wickler, Lucy Hache, and Melissa Haberl. My name is Lisa Gerbov, and you're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM.
How do you listen to CITR? Do you stream it with your data? You could be getting it free on your phone with the already installed FM receiver chip, but major carriers have blocked access to it. If you want access to all your favorite CITR goodness on your phone, get involved. Visit freeradiomyphone.ca to see how you can get involved by contacting your carrier and signing our petition.
Interested in starting a project to benefit the representation or experiences of historically disadvantaged groups within the UBC community?
Apply for funding through the Equity Enhancement Fund, which supports community-based initiatives that enhance equity, diversity, inclusion, and intercultural understanding at UBC.
It's open to UBC students, faculty, and staff. The deadline is February 28, 2017.
More information can be found at equity.ubc.ca/EEF-fund.
Vengo en busca de respuestas con el manojo lleno y las venas abiertas. Vengo. Como un libro abierto, ansiosa de aprender la historia no contada de nuestros ancestros. Con el viento que dejaron los abuelos y que vive en cada pensamiento de esta amada tierra, tierra. Quien sabe cuidarlo es quien de verdad la quiera. Vengo para mirar de nuevo, para verlo cierto y despertar el ojo ciego. Sin miedo, tú y yo descolonicemos lo que nos enseñaron. Con nuestro pelo negro, con pómulos marcados, con el orgullo indio en el alma tatuado. Vengo con la mirada, vengo con la palabra, esa palabra hablada. Vengo sin temor a no perder nada. Vengo como el niño que busca de su morada la entrada al origen, la vuelta de su cruzada. Vengo a buscar la historia silenciada, la historia de una tierra saqueada. Vengo con el mundo y vengo con los pájaros. Vengo con las flores y los árboles, sus cantos. Vengo con el cielo y sus constelaciones. Vengo con el mundo y todas sus estaciones. Vengo agradecida al punto de partida. Vengo con la madera, la montaña y la vida. Vengo con el aire, el agua, la tierra y el fuego. Vengo a mirar el mundo de nuevo. Vengo con mis ideas como escudo, con el sentir humano a vivir este mundo donde el hombre nuevo busca el contrapunto. Vengo humano, vengo como tú, en busca de la huella, de la pieza del árbol y de su corteza, que guarda en su memoria que el canto de victoria. Cuando vimos de la tierra lloramos con tal euforia, y abrimos así nuestros brazos tan encadilados y nos acurrucamos al origen de los tiempos, a la fuente del universo, donde yace el sentimiento de vivir este comienzo. Vengo con la sangre roja, con los pulmones llenos de rimas en mi boca, con los ojos rasgados, con la tierra en las manos. Venimos con el mundo y venimos con su canto. Vengo a construir un sueño, el brillo de la vida que habita en el hombre nuevo. Vengo buscando un ideal de un mundo sin clase que se pueda levantar. Vengo con el mundo y vengo con los pájaros. Vengo con las flores y los árboles, sus cantos. Vengo con el cielo y sus constelaciones. Vengo con el mundo y todas sus estaciones. Vengo agradecida al punto de partida. Vengo con la madera, la montaña y la vida. Vengo con el aire, el agua, la tierra y el fuego. Vengo a mirar el mundo de nuevo. Vengo a mirar el mundo de nuevo. Vengo en busca de respuestas con el manojo lleno y las venas abiertas. Vengo. Vengo buscando un ideal de un mundo sin clase que se pueda levantar. Vengo. Con nuestro pelo negro, pómulos marcados, con el orgullo indio en el alma tatuado. Vengo.
Okay. You hear Anati Jokes, Vengo, which is a single from the album also called Vengo. You are listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam Territory.
Next up, we will hear from several artists and producers who are participating in the Talking Stick Festival this week. Last week, we were invited to the Wahoks and Shkwalawan Gala on Thursday evening, where I spoke to Denicho Suche, associate producer at Full Circle First Nations Performance and the Talking Stick Festival. I also spoke to Colin Van Loon, curator of their film series Real Reservations, Cinematic Indigenous Sovereignty Series, as well as J.P. Longboat, artistic director of Circadia Indigena, who's there performing a piece called Greed Resolve. So let's hear from those folks.
Talking Stick. Denicho Suche, my name is Denicho. I'm the associate producer for Full Circle First Nations Performance and the Talking Stick Festival.
Can you tell us a bit about what you've been doing to prepare for this year's festival?
Yeah, absolutely. It started many months ago. We started talking about the general ideas, and so Margot Kane, who is artistic managing producer, takes care of most of the programming. While I get involved in those conversations, I then end up being one of the main executors of those ideas. So I do a lot of emails and a lot of phone calls and calling artists and helping book flights and organizing the staff and meetings with the venues. And so I kind of pull it all together, all of these grand ideas we have. I get to execute them, which is lovely and exciting.
Okay. So what kind of grand ideas are you highlighting this year?
I think there's a couple of really great things going on. One is our industry series, which is 5-day conference, up from last year, which was 4. It's grown significantly. It's an opportunity for arts professionals, Indigenous and non-Indigenous, to come together and really work towards goals that empower Indigenous artists nationally and internationally. The other really great legacy piece that we have this year is Margot Kane, our artistic director. Early in her career, before Full Circle, she wrote a solo show called Moon Lodge, which is our headline theater show being produced by Urban Inc. And it's the first time it's performed by not Margot, which I think is really fantastic to have such a historical piece being performed in what our government is calling the Year of Reconciliation, Canada 150, to really bring it to Canadian Indigenous roots, I think is empowering for us as Indigenous artists and our community.
Is the idea behind, and I guess the drive and motivation behind those talks, is that to build capacity for new and emerging artists, as well as like learning from that legacy of people like Margot, who've been involved in this field for a long time?
Absolutely. I think as an organization, Full Circle does as much, if not more, community building than producing. So we have community ticket programs, we have outreach programs into the local communities, we have an ensemble training program that develops emerging Indigenous artists. And I think I've actually been talking a lot about this with some of my peers about Margot's legacy specifically. I'm glad you bring it up in that frame, actually, because Margot is a fantastic artist, but she's in a lot of ways given that up to create a national community. So working from Vancouver with the Talking Stick Festival, she has developed an internationally recognized Indigenous arts community. And what a legacy. She's left some of the strongest creators in Indigenous theater and dance in Canada have benefited directly from the work she's done. And we wouldn't have what we have or be where we are at without her work.
What can people expect to see at the festival this year in terms of shows and performances?
Well, I mean, we have our headline theater show is Moon Lodge, which we've talked about, Margot Kane's piece. And then we have a dance piece called Greed Resolve, which promises to be very exciting, very high-level dance, and it's multimedia from what I understand. They have projectors and live feed and things like that. So if you're into that more traditional art forms, that's there. Also, the exhibit this year here at the Roundhouse is exceptional as far as I'm concerned. Jay Havens has done a great job curating some of the most exciting Indigenous visual artists that are located here in BC, and even as far as Mexico, a local Indigenous artist is living there doing his practice. But another departure from our traditional work that we do here at Full Circle is we have both a drag and burlesque performance and drag and burlesque workshops. And a lot of the work that those groups are doing, the Brush Harbor Girls and Virago Nation, is around decolonizing indigenous bodies and what that work means for the community. I mean, decolonizing indigenous bodies has a lot of good healing, especially in the place we're in the world with missing and murdered indigenous women being a very significant issue. So taking fun art forms and really, really empowering indigenous people is really exciting to me.
Is there anything more you'd like to share that I don't think that we haven't touched on? Like maybe shout outs to people who have been really instrumental to getting this all together, things that things that you want to get out there into the public consciousness.
I think one is we have a huge number of Pay What You Can events. So that's a very accessible festival. It's not $60 tickets that you can't afford. You can come to shows, and if you can't afford shows but want to come, we have a community tickets program that you can apply for on our website at fullcircle.ca. Please, please come. We want to host you. We want to be here to support your participation in Indigenous Performing Arts. And I'd also really like to give a big shout-out to the team that produces the festival this year. They've been working day and night to really share their passion with the community, and I just want to give a heartfelt thank you to all of those folks.
Well, thank you very much for being to talk to me and to share the Talking Stick Festival with Unceded Airwaves. So I appreciate it. Miigwech.
So my name is Colin Van Loon. I'm originally from Southern Alberta. I come from the Blackfoot Confederacy. My reserve is Brockett in Blackfoot. That would be Pagani. And I've been living and working on Coast Salish territory for about 10 years. Around 5 years ago, I approached Margot because before that I was an actor and I'd worked with the Full Circle Ensemble for quite some time. And I asked that Margot create a space for screening films within the Talking Stick Festival. And she basically said, yes, we will do that. And so we started off very small, just having one night, showing a couple of films. And now after 5 years, we have three nights, and we open at Van City. This year we're closing at SFU, and we're doing our short series over at the Culch.
So what kinds of films are you showing, and who's, what kinds of filmmakers are you showcasing?
Yeah, so, we are a home and a space for indigenous filmmakers in the city. And, we try our best to scour North America and bring indigenous films from everywhere. And actually, even this year, we have a film from a West Coast filmmaker that was made at Maoriland Festival in New Zealand. And it was also made with a couple New Zealand filmmakers. This year we're showing, I'll just run down the list. We're showing Colonization Road, which is Michelle St. John. We're showing The Fast, which is a film made by Doreen Manuel, who runs the IDF program. We're showing Angry Anuk, which is made by Anika Brazel and is one of the most highly decorated films in Canada this year. It's screening everywhere. I think right now it is screening in Berlin. And for our short series, we have Amanda Strong's for Faces of the Moon. We have Alexis's Cree Code Talkers. We have Gitsan Water Prayer, The Takeover, which is a student film for out of CAP. We have Indian Giver, which is Trevor Soloway's film. Stolen, which is Devery Jacobs' film. We have Picking Up the Pieces, which is a film which was made sort of with the Ministry of Child and Family Services by Damien Eaglebear. We have Blue in the Face, which was originally produced for APTN. We have Standing Rock documentary, Claudia Manuel, and Healthy Transitions, which was another film that came out of the ministry, just talking about youth aging out of care. So we have a pretty wide variety of very, very high-level professional films, and we have some student films, but I stand behind the quality of them all. I think they're all excellent, and I think that everybody should come see every day. I think it's an amazing set of programming we have this year.
So you just mentioned a whole host of films, and you've been You've been getting this ball rolling for a few years now, it sounds like.
Yep. We're in our fifth year.
So what are you building towards for this platform for Indigenous filmmakers to present their work?
Yeah, so the hope is to eventually have a week-long festival that occupies a space on the West Coast and is a home for Indigenous artists in very similar fashion to Imaginative in Toronto. And then beyond that, I think that it would be really great if, in addition to showing films, we could start getting some funding to help artists produce things out of our festival.
So for any Indigenous filmmaker out there who's maybe they're in Western Canada and they wanna know how to both get involved in productions and show a wider audience their work, what is your advice to them?
I would say find my email. It's on the Talking Stick website somewhere. Please let me know about your film and we'll do our best to screen it. We also have some relationship with the Vancouver Film Festival and a few other smaller festivals. So, sometimes we do turn curators on to other works that they probably wouldn't have seen because they might not just have sort of foundation in the Indigenous community that I have.
Is there anything else you wanted to add about real reservations or the work you've been doing?
I just think that whether you're Indigenous or non-Indigenous, I think that our festival has something for you. I think that our series is really tremendous, and I think that there's a piece of art that speaks to everybody. So bring your kids, bring your dog, and come on out.
Well, thanks very much for taking the time to speak with us. Miigwech.
Okay, so I'm J.P. Longboat. I'm Mohawk and from the Six Nations of the Grand River Reserve. I'm part of a collective called Circadia Indigena, and we're in a circle of artists that come together and create work, work with story, work with culture narrative, often based on a particular theme or a particular set of values that we want to reclaim as First Peoples. So I'm Mohawk, Byron Chief Moon is Blackfoot, and Olivia Davies is Anishinaabe. So for example, we bring all of our cultural stories to this narrative, and the English word is greed. That's a word that we're working with. That's a concept, that's an idea, that's a value, in a way that we're working with within this piece, because we want to counterbalance that based on how we want to live our lives within our own territories across Turtle Island. So to us, we go back to our teaching stories, we go back to our the voices of our elders, and talking about how do we live in harmony with the natural environment. And a central value to that is the idea of taking only what you need. Taking only what you need and leave the rest for others, for other animals, so that everyone can partake in the resources that Mother Earth provides us. And in that way we can continue to live in balance, and the circle of life will continue to revolve and evolve and to circle around and regenerate itself. We're illuminating what we need to say right now in this moment. We've journeyed, the work that we are going to present journeys from the past, and probably the most recent past, through that 500 years of colonization. And I know that all of us as artists, we want to reclaim our stories. We want to reclaim our connection to our community, to our culture. And this is one of the ways that I think that we do that, definitely as artists, telling stories. That's a very strong tether to the legacy of our people. We also want to illuminate the relationship, or where we've come in the relationship over the last 500 years, and where we find ourselves as First Nations people in this moment. I think that's probably the most powerful part of the piece and the most passionate part of the piece is we're speaking of our experience from this point, from right now, with the generations that are present as the performers are on stage. And they range from anywhere from, at this point, within the ensemble that we have, from our mid-20s and to our early 60s. So when the initial creation of Greed began, and that was actually in 2012, Byron and another dancer were paired with a contemporary composer. They chose a piece of music, and then they began to explore. That resulted in a 10-minute piece that was called Greed, because they started to explore this idea of the stock market, the real estate within Vancouver, these kinds of economic aspects that were shaping the sort of the community around us. And it was very interesting because that 10-minute piece, when I saw it, I was very moved to say, wow, that is a real central theme that we can then expand on. And so that's where the partnership between Byron Chief Moon and myself began, because we wanted to take that core piece of 10 minutes and expand it to a full-length work, because we knew there were so many elements that we could bring into that basic theme of living in balance and taking only what you need. It's a cultural a wrestling match in that, you know, the mainstream culture rewards that idea of getting as much as you can, rewards that idea of, you know, of extreme wealth, whereas the values of First People talk about the idea of sharing that wealth across the community so everyone is empowered. And we thought that was just an amazing place to begin as a platform to bring the collectiveness of the artists that we brought together and begin to elaborate from the First Nations perspective on this idea of living in balance with the natural resources that Mother Earth gives us. The idea, of course, is that she gives us everything we need to live a beautiful life, to live a healthy, good life, and that we should never forget that. We really approach the work in a way that includes all of our performance culture, so that it would include spoken word, cultural narrative, song, dance. I'm using these terms, but we want to be able to have those within the palette that we work with. All of the expression that we bring to the piece. And that's what's wonderful about this collective, and that's the focus of the collective, is that it comes from a traditional root, firstly. And I think that's what makes it a powerful piece, because the artists that we come together, the artists that Circadia Indigena works with, have that groundedness within their culture and can bring those sensitivities to the work. So I think that's what makes it unique. That's what makes it powerful, and that's what makes it, I do think it's compelling. I think it's compelling as a true experience from a variety of generations, shall we say, to what's happened to our people, to our families, and to our communities, particularly over the last 20, 30 years.
Well, I look forward to checking it out. Thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me. Mm-hmm. I really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Miigwech.
Thank you to everyone who spoke to Unceded Airwaves about the Talking Stick Festival. I also interviewed Richard Hekla Sawan, whose award-winning piece Freedom Flag is being shown at the Kwekwai Stowai Visual Art Exhibit at the festival this week. You can find that interview on our online platform. The Talking Stick Festival is an ongoing unceded event, and you can find the schedule for the Talking Stick Festival on our Facebook and Twitter pages. You're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territory of the Musqueam people.
Tune in every Thursday from 11 p.m. till midnight for Copy and Paste with your host, Tim, a.k.a. Autonomy, the very best in underground dance music.
Hello and welcome to the Unceded Airwaves Show, CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you from the unceded ancestral territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam peoples. My name is Mario, on the land correspondent, and I identify as Niska from my mother and of European ancestry from my father. Today's segment is a pre-recorded interview conducted February 16th at the Good Hearts, Good Minds Youth Conference in Gastown. This segment's intro music is a live performance by DJ Cookum, who I got a chance to catch up with later after her set. Here's DJ Cookum sharing a little bit about herself.
Well, I am Cree and Dene. My Dene ancestry comes from Cold Lake, Alberta, the Dene Sault Ste. Territory. And then the other side, I'm from Alexis Nakota Sioux Nation as well.
Then I asked how DJ Cookum's experience was playing for the youths.
Yeah, so we did a youth show for this youth conference. I DJed for Mob Bounce. And yeah, no, I had lots of fun. I do a lot of youth dances and stuff. So, usually there's way bigger dance floor. And we don't get noise complaints. It's joking. But it was lots of fun. And I really enjoy DJing for youth.
Here's DJ Cookum describing the kind of music she likes to make.
Yeah, well, right now I am a DJ. I'm getting into making beats and stuff, but I don't have anything out right now that I'm confident enough to put out or, do like live remixes and EDM music, like, EDM trap, hip hop. I really love like the Moonbatone sounding stuff, house music. Like, I love it all. But yeah, those are my genres.
I also got to ask if there's a mixtape we should check out.
Sure. Well, I did put together a mix. It's called Limitless Indigenous Hip Hop Mix. And it's about an hour long, and it's all just First Nations hip hop artists. Yeah, I always wanted to do that. I like to promote Native people, or like our people's art and music and stuff. So, yeah.
If you're interested in supporting and checking out a show with DJ Cookum, she tells us all of her upcoming shows.
I do a lot of like various events. I have Talking Stick Festivals coming up, so I have about 3 shows with them. Tuesday, February 21st, doing a show at the Hindenburg, and it's featuring Niska, Napoleon, and burlesque dancers. The following night, on February 22nd, Wednesday, we're doing a hip-hop show at Studio on Granville. Doors are 10. I think the tickets are $15. Featuring Mama Rude Gale, Status Crew, Christy Charles, and myself, DJ Cookum. And then Thursday, February 23, I'll just be doing a reception at Van City Theater, probably like 7 p.m. And then I believe March 24th, I'm DJing at the annual She Fest at the Wise Hall. Details are still to come out and stuff, but look out for that. You can go to my website for any upcoming shows. It's www.djkookum.com. You can also check me out on Instagram. It is DJ Cookum. Twitter is DEEJAY Cookum. I'm on Facebook, so you can find me everywhere.
If there's any up-and-coming Indigenous artists or songs Unceded Airwaves should play, please send us a message on Facebook or Twitter using the hashtag UncededMusic, and we'll give you a shout-out if your song is played. As I ended the interview, I asked DJ Cookum what hashtags she is using.
I'm always like hashtag female DJ, but I don't really have any. Can hashtag DJ Cookum? I don't know. No cool hashtags. I never came up with any cool ones yet.
I want to thank DJ Cookum for her generosity and positive vibes. Toiksanin. Once again, this is Unceded Airwaves Show. My name is Mario, on the land correspondent, and you just heard a pre-recorded interview conducted February 16th at the Good Hearts, Good Minds Youth Conference in Gastown. The Unceded Airwaves Show is coming to you from CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting to you from the unceded ancestral territories of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam peoples.
Thank you to Mario Perrin for updating us on events with DJ Cookham and Josh Kiyoki for putting together the segment on the Talking Stick Festival.
Thank you to Maya Wickler, Lucy Hashia, and Melissa Haber for organizing the student panel on the furlong keynote speech and fundraising event.
And thank you to our hosts for the day, Carly Baker and Victor Sosa.
And also thank you to Josh Kiyoki for board opping for us today. We really appreciate it because without a board op, we would not be on the air. My name is Lisa Gerbov, and you're listening to Unceded Airwaves on CITR 101.9 FM. You can find the link to this podcast on our website at CITR.ca/unceded-airwaves. And you can also find it on Facebook and on Twitter at Unceded Airwaves. Thanks for being with us.
Mama copia, mama copia, mama copia, mama copia, mama copia.